Hello, everyone. Today is Saturday, June 10th, 2023. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We are not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Thanks for joining us today. We are Indicator Information Institute. My name is Carol Worlius, and my business partner, Jim Knox, and I have these calls every second and fourth Saturday of the month. These calls are recorded and available on our website, indicatorinformation.com, as well as indicator-calls.com and iiicalls.com. As we get closer and closer to our expected windfall event, we thought this would be a good time to review our common law contract trust and why we think it is the best vehicle for you to protect your assets. We're happy to answer your trust questions. That's why we're here. Many of you ask about the actual exchange and what to expect. This is not our area of expertise, and we've been asked not to speculate about procedures, so please don't ask. As always, your trust questions are welcome. Just star 6 to raise your hand. We have been discussing common law contract trusts for some time now. We have done our research and still feel the trust program we offer is the best of the best. It has withstood the test of time in the courtroom, all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court, what my husband used to call the biggest legal dance in the country. This is a common law contract in trust form. You're guaranteed the right to contract by the U.S. Constitution, which says that no state shall pass any law impairing the obligation of contract. There's no attorney, CPA, financial planner, or estate planner that's going to be able to set you up in a statutory program of any type that will protect your assets as well as our common law contract trust. Most of the above-named individuals have no clue about this powerful creature from common law. It is easy to set up and fairly priced. We advise you on who, what, and where you need to complete the application, complete our easy-to-use web-based application, and we also obtain a tax ID for the trust. To create this trust, you actually exchange your assets in return for $21 and 100 trust certificate units. These trust certificates are very powerful. As a matter of fact, the Supreme Court has ruled that the certificate given in a pure trust in exchange are valid consideration for a contract or agreement. We use a disinterested third party called a curator who is an actual person. In essence, when you give him your personal property, in this case your assets or your currency, he in turn will give you those trust certificates. They're very powerful because of what they do and because of what they don't do. They have no ascertainable value, and they become null and void upon your death. They do give you the right to a distribution of the assets should the trustee decide to make one. Not only is our trust easy to operate to begin with, but our members' only website is full of minutes, resolutions, and contracts for your use. Please excuse me, folks. I don't know why I'm having such a difficult time talking this morning. Because this is a contract, you, the original investor exchanger, may be and usually are appointed as first trustee. You may appoint your spouse or partner as co-trustee. You may appoint your children as successor trustees and keep your successors within your bloodline if you so desire. Although the trust has a limited life of 25 years, it can be renewed by a minute every 25 years. It is designed to live, not to die, like most trusts. Some people have statutory living trusts, which are great at avoiding probate, but they provide zero asset protection. Our common law contract trust is irrevocable, providing superior asset protection. I recently listened to a little history on trusts and found this. It was oral and a little bit wordy. I got the transcript. I edited a little bit to make it easier to follow, but I think you'll get the gist of it. The super wealthy started using these types of trusts back in the late 1800s, starting with J.P. Morgan, who went to his lawyers and said, "Guys, I want you to put together for me an entity that is so powerful that it's impenetrable, or something that I can put my financial empire in and never have to worry about losing a dime." It took them almost 2 years as they went through all the statutory entities that they knew of at the time and tried to combine this and combine that and couldn't do it. Finally, one of them came across this and said, wait a minute, let's look at Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution. No state shall pass any law impairing the obligation of contract, which means if we put our wishes into a contractual obligation, it's protected by the Constitution of the United States. You basically need an amendment to overturn it, and you know that's not going to happen due to the fact that too many of those in government and our government leaders have this very program. When J.P. Morgan's people first put it together, it was known as the Massachusetts Trust. It was started primarily because corporations could not own land, so they wanted another entity to own the land, and it became then that they said, well, let's just call it our business trust. They run their business through it. In 1924, the case of U.S. Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court case of Heck v. Nally was for the first time described as a pure trust, also known as a blind trust, specialty trust, contract or constitutional trust, common law trust, or a true trust. All these things are the names for one and the same. Judges just refer to them in different manners. The key thing about them is that they're not statutory. They're created privately, and they're created according to the obligation of a contract. Our trust, going back to indicator, our trust is actually a non-grantor, irrevocable, common law contract, business trust organization. So I'm sure you can understand why we refer to it as the common law contract trust. Another trick of the super wealthy is to own nothing and control everything. There are downsides to ownership. If you own it, someone may try to take it away from you, and it creates liability. You know, we all like our stuff and are proud that we've been able to afford what we have. But do you really have to own that oceanside villa in the Caribbean or just enjoy it? What about that fancy new car, boat, or recreational vehicle? Wouldn't you rather just enjoy your toys without worrying about all that liability? We suggest using individual trusts to protect those assets. The whole idea is to insulate and isolate so liability from one doesn't roll over into the other. Initially, all you need is a motherlode trust, which holds your currency and will be the trust you use at your exchange. No doubt you will want additional trusts in the future, such as management trusts, real estate, vehicle, annuity, charitable trust, etc. That is kind of wordy, folks. Sorry about that. Anyway, Jim, what would you like to add today?
Well, everything you've said, we live by. That's one thing. Both Carol and I do nothing but trust work, and we have nothing but trust. Our AMI corporation, no LLC, none of that stuff. Everything I have is always in a trust. So just emphasizing that this vehicle has been very good for me for 44 years. I have not had any issues. I've had a couple of people attack me looking for retribution or money or something like this, and they never succeeded. So it's been good to us. Let's talk about the contracts real quick. Carol, you and I have been working on these contracts for about, 2 weeks. We pretty much got them done. And I planned on having those posted later today so people can download. Now, these are contracts where you connect the trust. I've been writing some material, and it'll be posted at the same time. It's kind of like an example, and it's also some instructions, and it's also some information about liens. Most people don't realize in real estate or any other type of entity, there are liens that are not recorded. But if you buy a house that has a lien on it that is not recorded, and you don't find out about it, you're still liable for that lien. So they're called unrecorded liens. So I've been doing some research on multiple states on that. And we can use that to our advantage. So, and I'm coming up with a way to do that. I'll have it done, like I said, today or tomorrow, but it'll be posted. So you don't have to have your lien recorded. There has to be some place where it can be found in the event that you want it found. And that's what I'm working on right now. So an unrecorded lien is dangerous to you if you're the person that has to pay the lien. But it's also an advantage to you if somebody's going to try and come after your property They think they can get it, and they can't find anything until unrecorded lien pops up through a deep title search, and that's what we're hoping that we can get set up. And that's an asset protection mechanism. So basically what we are trying to come up with is the best way for your mother lode trust to create your other trusts and then take their certificates of beneficial interest because the mother lode trust is the investor, and you know, the investor which becomes a trustee, which also has the certificates of beneficial interest. What that does is if you have a piece of real estate and the certificates of beneficial interest are given over to the mother lode trust basically for collateral, and there's an unrecorded lien someplace that's available if they really search for it, that means that if they try and take the property, they have to pay the property lien off. And that's what we used to use doing corporations back in the, that was the late 80s, early 90s in Nevada, but we decided we could use the trust. So we want to get that done right away, and then it'll be on there. And I will have a lot of information on that by probably, I'll say Monday or Tuesday. I've got it. I just have to put it on the website. You want to comment on that, Carol?
No, like you said, we've been working on these contracts, and as Jim mentioned, it's how they work together. So, for instance, you've got your management trust, and the management trust, you know, you've got your mother lode trust. The mother lode trust creates a management trust. Well, there has to be some kind of agreement between them on how the management trust gets money and what it's supposed to do. In many cases, I know myself and Jim and just about everybody I know is planning on buying probably new homes and new cars post-RV. So the management trust directs, I mean, the mother lode trust directs the management trust to act on behalf of the real estate trust to buy a piece of property. So there are contracts, that's what we're writing right now, is the contracts that they all work together. Mother lode, management, real estate, vehicle trust, whatever. It's just a way, I mean, it keeps the money flowing where it needs to flow. It eliminates the need for a bank account for real estate or vehicle trust. The whole idea is to make it easier for you to manage. As you know, we suggest additional or separate trusts for everything. You know, can you imagine the bookkeeping nightmare you'd have if every real estate trust or every vehicle trust had its own bank account? So that is the biggest reason we came up with the management trust, to make it, to streamline it a little bit. Jim?
Yeah, that's good to emphasize on that. The other thing that I want to double emphasize is we are coming up with a mechanism which I explained a minute ago, to where you will be using the certificates of beneficial interest to move the asset into another trust, and they won't even know that. If they try to attack it, they can't get it because there's a lien against it, and they have to pay the lien off. So let's say you have a house that's worth, let's just use a low number, $250,000, and they try and sue and take the house for $250,000. Well, if the certificates of beneficial interest of the real estate trust are held and owned by the mother lode trust, mother lode trust say, hey, you can't take the house off paying the debt. And we have a $250,000 lien on that house. So they'd have to pay the lien off to get the house. Now, they're not going to do that because they end up with zero. So this is what we've been doing years and years, kind of in a covert way, but now I want to make it mainstream for our group. And I think I've got it figured out. And a couple people I've had review it that are semi-legal people, they agree it's right. Now I'm just getting all the terms set up and trying to figure out how to do this unrecorded lien but still have it available. Should you need to bring it up, say, well, there it was there all the time. You just didn't do your research. So we're going to have that figured out next couple days. And
okay.
I think it's going to be a lot of power, horsepower generated by doing that. You'll have just another complete layer of asset protection that nobody's using, and we'll get it done. Trust me, folks, we'll get it done.
No, we usually do. Sometimes it takes a while, but we usually get it done.
Yeah. So. A lot of research going into this kind of stuff. I've spent a lot of time going from state to state looking at their laws on liens. There's some good ones, good states, and there's some pretty bad ones out there. But there are a lot of things that I'm reading that gives me a lot of hints on how to do this, to where the lien is actually quasi, lack of a better term, recorded, but not openly recorded, but yet you can refer to it and show that, yeah, it was recorded back then, so this is legitimate, and you can't take that property unless you pay off the debt, and I own the debt on that $250,000 house at $250,000. So you got to pay the debt before you take the house, and that stops that right there. So that's what we'll have that here shortly.
Yeah.
We've been fighting the cares, we've been working for quite a while. There's a lot to it, so well, we've got to figure it out.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys, you have no idea. I know Jim does as well, but you have no idea just how many files that we have created for all of this to make it all work together easily for you. The easy part, the big easy part, that's what we want to do. We want to make it easy for you. Well, Jim, if you don't have anything else to add, why don't we just open it up for Q&A?
Let's do it.
All righty. So anybody who has a question, just star 6, raise your hand, and we will talk about it. So as we were saying, just the list of files goes on and on and on. And it's time-consuming. It's brain-consuming, wouldn't you say, Jim? Makes you a little dizzy after a while. Yeah.
It does. It does. And you end up going around and around circles, but you finally find those little nuggets that you're looking for that can be documented in a court case. That's what I'm trying to find, is all the stuff in court cases to prove that this thing is valid, and we'll have it. We'll get her done.
I know. Okay, we do have a. I do have a question from Al. Okay, how are you, Al?
I'm doing good in many ways. I did not alert you folks to the fact that the creator of my trust passed away. That was my husband.
That's okay.
And that was
I'm sorry, your husband passed.
Yeah, me too. A couple of months ago, and I think I've gotten myself pretty much back together. And the question I want to ask now is if and when I would have to actually add the number of a currency that I have in my trust. I have it labeled as, you know, the name of the currency, but no number attached. Do I have to put that on at any particular time, or can I just not put it on? The amount of currency.
In my opinion, Carol can give you hers in a minute, don't put the number of units or the stuff ever. You know,
okay.
I've got a trust, mm-hmm. and it's got all my currency, and I got the blank there, and I'm going to leave the line blank. And what we did that for is it could be a possibility one or two of your notes were not accepted. May have been a counterfeit, maybe a bad note, and you would have had a number in there that wasn't true. So that's why we put the blank in front of the type of currency. Do you have to put in the trust? No, you don't. It's going to be in your accounting anyway. Somewhere in your files it'll be there. But in my opinion, no, you don't have to put that in. You don't have to disclose. You have to disclose the currency that you exchange, but you don't have to disclose the amount nor the value after the fact. Do you agree with that, Carol?
Oh, absolutely. Like as you just said, that's why we put blanks in there. I did have somebody tell me a long, long time ago, well, you need to list everything. Well, no, you don't. I mean, it is your initial exchange. So a lot of people are going back and say, okay, let's say I bought $1 million back in 2000 or in 2015, and then I bought more. You cannot go back and add that as a number to Schedule A. And when we've created these trusts, long before any of us ever heard about dinar, what went into Schedule A was always $100 in other consideration or $100 under cash deposits. It is not necessary to give anybody the exact amount. And as Jim said, it will be in your own accounting anyway. You're all, I'm sure, going to make or have made some kind of a tally sheet about the amount of currency that you have. And if you're as anal as I am, you've gone ahead and you put in figures at how much you're going to get if it comes in at a certain rate. So that's a long answer to your question, Al, but the short answer is no, you do not have to put the amounts in.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. And to your husband's passing, I'm sorry to hear that, but as curator, it does not affect your trust at all.
Right.
Unless he had some certificates, and I do not recall if he did or not. I doubt it. No, he wouldn't have had certificates. So it doesn't Your husband's death does not affect your trust at all.
Okay, that's good. What about the $100? Now, at one time I made an account in the name of my trust, but then I stopped using that particular trust and got a new one and haven't put any money in a bank, being advised, I think, not to open an account before anything was exchanged. So do I take $100 bill?
Yeah. No, there's $100 on the cash deposits, and we came up with $100 because typically, you need to open a bank account. But nobody's going to come after you and say, "Okay, where's the $100?" If you had, if the $100 is there, you open a bank account. There's your $100. I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay.
All right. Anything else?
Yes. Yeah.
Anything else?
Well, you know, I have a friend who's become interested in what I'm doing, and he asked me a lot of questions, and I think that I can find the answers to them online on your website. But he was wondering why he can't just go and find this trust online. And I just told him, well, nobody's posted it online, and it's a good thing.
It's private. You
know, it's private. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if he has any questions, just have him give me a call. We'll take care of it.
Okay. Okay, wonderful. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Al. Let's
okay, before the next one, let me add something to that, Karen. Let me add something to that.
Go ahead.
Okay,
sure,
folks,
go ahead.
Listen. We have 163, now it's going to be 164 calls on the Internet. And we have about 140, 130 PDFs. Everything that Carol has been reading, every call is a PDF that you can download. That is a library that everybody should have. Just go to our website, iiicalls.com, and wherever you see that there's a call right below it, it says the PDF. Just click on it, download it, put it in your computer. You'll have most everything you'll ever need, and it's great to sit down and read. It's usually 5 or 6, 7, 10-minute read, but it's very packed full of facts. Just go get those PDFs. You will be amazed at what you'll learn by just rereading those. And if you have to, just listen to the call. But if you have in your computer and somebody has a question for you, or let's say like in Ella's case, somebody is interested, she could grab one of those and send it to him and or her, and that may be the thing that gets them started. But there's so much good information in those PDFs. People don't use them. They should be reading them. As much as they read their trust, they should read those PDFs. They're great. Carol is a bang-up job on that stuff.
Thanks, Jim. Yeah. Okay. Jim, all right. Our next. Connie, go ahead. You're next.
Yeah. Did you say those files are under i.com?
No. It's indicatorinformation.com. At the very top, you can go to it. There's a link there that goes to it. Let me pull it up real quick. Let's take a second here.
I'm writing it down here. Okay. My other question was, because we started way back when Carol and Jim, our other Jim, started this, and the notaries that notarize these affidavits are expired. Is that going to be a challenge when we go to exchange or, you know, a red flag?
No, it was valid when she signed it.
Right.
Her signature as a notary was valid when she signed it. That's all that matters.
That's all that matters. Okay. Mm-hmm. The other thing on changing trustees on the trust, what form do we use to do that? Or just do
it's on the web. It's on the website. Jim, you want to tell her where it is?
Yeah, if you go to the website, I'm pulling it up right now. Give me a second here. Okay, so you want to know the minute. You're looking for the minutes, correct?
Well, do I put it in minutes when you change a trustee?
Yes.
Okay, in the minutes.
Okay,
all right.
There's a list of, if you go to the website, indicatorinformation.com,
right.
Look at the menu on the top, and where it says minutes, you can click on that, and there'll be a bunch of them in there. And you just look for the one that it's titled as such.
Okay. Thanks so much. That's really all that I needed to ask, and trusting that you all have a blessed weekend and that this is our day, a new beginning.
Yeah, let's hope so. Thanks, Connie. Yeah. So, Jim, I'm sure you found out the actual website. It's III.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, we got sidetracked on two things there. I have a short attention span today. I don't know what's going on. Let me pull it up again. I closed it. Yeah, okay, well, if you go to the website, I'm just going to go to our website, Indicator, to start with. So that way you'll know where to go. I'll walk you through it. Just take a second. I'm loading it right now. And using RoboForm is so good because I'm already in the website. It took that much time. Wow, love my RoboForms. Okay, so at the top of the website, there's a menu. Below that says, welcome to new Indicator Information Instance. And then it's got a blue bar. Then there's two boxes. The one on the left says we have our own conference call webpage now. It says either indicator-calls.com or iiicalls.com. Either one of those get. Now, there are two hyperlinks there. Just pick one. And it'll take you right to the website. So always go to our website if you get lost and can't figure out things. Like our application. The next box to the right of that is complete your application at 3itrustapp.com. It's a hyperlink. Click on it. It'll take you over where all the applications are at. Also, if you have an issue where you can't log in, and that's something I do want to talk about in a minute, if you can't log in, you have a failure, on there is a login issue button when you go to 3itrustapp, and if you have some changes you need to make, there's a button for that. Now, about this, people, I've gotten about 7 or 8 emails in the last month from people that are longtime clients of ours, says, we're not getting the notifications anymore. So I go in to look and find out that they had unsubscribed. For me to resubscribe, I got to give the company that is managing this for us valid evidence or proof or convince them somehow that that was a mistake on your part, that you really do want to get that. And the only thing short of that is have you give me a different email address and let me go in and re-register you. Because once you unsubscribe, by law, they just can't let me go in there and redo it. They have to, you know that, okay, that was an error. I got to do this paperwork. It's a royal pain in the patootie. So don't do that. If you do that, probably the best thing to do is if you have a second email address, let us know, and we'll get you right back in there. But there's a couple of people that say, well, I don't get through my messages in no more. Well, I go in and look and find out they have unsubscribed. So that's really a problem. It was a mistake you made. There's an unsubscribe button at the bottom of all of the people's stuff, and you must have hit that by accident or out of frustration, maybe intentionally. But it takes almost an act of Congress for me to get you back in right away. So just be careful. So that's what I wanted to get out to everybody. When you just don't unsubscribe. It's a pain in the butt. What else we got, Carol?
All right, let's see who's next here. Donna, how are you today?
Thank you. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good, thanks. What's on your mind?
I've seen commercials on TV where people have been scammed by somebody stealing their deeds, and then they come to find out that they don't own their house anymore. Does the house trust protect us from scammers?
No.
Okay.
No, because if it's
do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know what you're talking about. I'm familiar with that. I have somebody that's a victim of that right now that I know. And
yeah,
so they go in there.
Pardon
me?
You're always trying to sell an insurance to protect you against that. So I didn't know if the deed protects us from that.
No, the trust is not. Because even doesn't matter who, for example, the trust is valid no matter what happens. But if they go in and purport to be you and get that moved into another name, that's what they do, and then they'll take the house. And the only way to stop that is to prove that you didn't do that. And that's very, very hard. Takes a pretty powerful attorney firm to get you out of that one.
Wow.
So you may want to investigate that insurance. It's not a bad idea. There are other ways to do that, and that's what I'm working on, which in the beginning of our call, I said we're going to have a way to put a lien against the property.
Yeah.
So they'd have to pay it off to take it. That's what I'm talking about.
That would be terrific.
Yeah. But the issue is, if you record the lien, we may want to amend what we just said. Let me do a little research, Donna. But I think that in some cases you may want that a lien recorded. In other cases, we could do it covertly where the lien is not actually recorded, but it is out there, and then you could take the house back. And that's what I'm working on, folks. I'm trying to get this stuff done.
Wow.
And I'm going to get it done. It may take some
time. Funny thing is, I had that question written down before you even mentioned that. So it was on my mind. One other thing. If we're involved in possible humanitarian project work, if we have that kind of valuation, some of the groups that are doing humanitarian projects are talking about special trusts for those, and they seem to be statutory trusts. Would I have to have a separate motherlode trust or something special that I could put together that just deals separately with humanitarian projects and then have a sub-trust for each project, like a motherlode for being a benefactor, and then sub-trust and have that separate from the trust I currently have for my private use?
You could have all of the above. It doesn't matter to us. It's how much time do you want to spend managing paperwork? How much money are you willing to put into having all these trusts? It's up to you. I mean, there are advantages to doing that. There are disadvantages to doing that, time-wise. What I'm doing is I shouldn't say this, but I will. What I'm doing with my trusts on the humanitarian projects is I'm going to have a separate team running those. I'll be a trustee, but I'll have an executive trustee team running all that stuff. And I'll probably leave it up to them how they want to secure whatever project they're working on. If they want a separate trust, I'll do a separate trust. If they want to stay within the code, I'll let them stay within the code. It doesn't matter. It's whatever you're comfortable with.
And so you're going to do that under your main motherlode trust that you currently have for your private use and just separate that out?
Well, yeah, my motherlode trust will be the primary trust for everything, business, pleasure, whatever.
Right.
Is this the one that has the money? No, it's the bank. Yeah,
okay.
So just consider your motherlode your bank. You have your own private bank. So that's what it is. So it's going to fund everything. So it has to have some connection in there at all times. But that, remember now, when you get your motherlode trust and when you go to the redemption center and when you set up your account, you have to tell the bankers, I want this private. I don't want this used for training purposes. I don't want any teller to ever see this amount. The only time that this bank or this trust can be money can be moved is if I physically go to my wealth manager and sit in front of the computer with him or her, and then the money can be transferred. So you want to put a lot of roadblocks around that thing. You want to make sure nobody can get in there from any angle. Or find out. Again, remember, I've said this many times, can you imagine a teller is making $45,000 a year, looks and sees your motherlode account with a gazillion dollars in it? Do you think she's not going to tell her family and friends what she saw?
Yeah.
See, it's human nature. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just human nature. When we get something like that, we like to tell people. So you want to make sure that nobody sees that amount or that account except your wealth managers and you. That's it.
Right. Okay. Well, thank you for that. That helps a lot. Thanks.
All right.
All right. Thank you, Donna. Let's see who's next. Bonnie, what's on your mind today?
Hi. I've got a couple of questions. So, first off, I don't quite understand what these trust certificates are good for. What do you do with them?
Boy. Carol, you want to start on that and I'll finish it?
Well, as Jim just said, when the motherlode trust creates additional trust. It owns all the certificates of that new trust. Those certificates are collateral. So let's say the mother lode trust and a management trust, you know, there's a real estate trust. And they want to buy a house. So the certificates become collateral for the amount of money that's needed to buy the house. That's one of the very, very good things about them. Another good thing is that the certificates become null and void upon your death. So they're not included in your estate. They're of undeterminable value. Another reason they're not included in your estate, because nobody knows what they're worth. And that's down and dirty. Jim, you got any quick to add to that?
Yeah, the question was, what are the certificates for? It's like a stock certificate if you own a corporation. We'll put it in that vernacular for a minute. So if you own a corporation, you have stock certificates. And those stock certificates evidence the value that you have. So you could actually take those stock certificates and sell them to somebody for whatever determined value that you two agree on, and now they own your corporation. Well, the certificates of beneficial interest are similar to that, but not just like that, because they're not publicly traded. A certificate of beneficial interest represents the total value of what's at the corpus of the trust. So it's like evidence that you have the control. And the certificate holders are entitled to a distribution should you decide to make one. Nobody else is entitled to it, but the certificate holders are. Distribution would be if you decide you want to liquidate 80% of the money in the trust and put it someplace else. I wouldn't do it, but you could, you know, take the certificates in and say, okay, I'm a certificate holder. I want this 80%, and you go spend the money however you want to spend it. That's not a good use of money, not a smart idea either, but that's how powerful they are. I mean, does that help?
Yeah, kind of. So if I was going to have a real estate trust and the mother lode trust was buying it, then I would take one of those certificates and transfer that by minutes to the mother lode trust. Is that what you're saying?
No.
No.
Yes and no. Yes and no. Okay, the certificates are going to move, but not that way. Okay, that's why I say yes and no. The certificates are collateral. So the investor gets the certificates, which turns out to be the trustee, correct? That's how you got yours.
Right.
All right. The mother lode trust is going to be the investor. Although it's not a human being at this point, it is represented, and the trustee, which would be you, of the mother lode, would then, the mother lode trust would say, hey, you know, you need a house. You're entitled for us to supply you with a house, so make it so, number one. And you just simply, at that point, get a hold of us. We then will create the real estate trust using your trust as the investor. So those certificates of beneficial interest, all of them, in the real estate trust are now owned by the mother lode trust, which is now a collateral stake. In other words, anything that the real estate trust owns, the collateral of the real estate is now controlled and owned by the mother lode trust. So there's your one step of protection. That's what these are about. So it's like the stock in a corporation. You can do weird things with the stock in a corporation. You know, a lot weirder things than you can do with these. But basically, that's if anybody ever knows about corporations and the stock value, the stock certificates, well, that's basically what these certificates are in this example where you're using them for collateral. But they have a lot more horsepower. I don't know how to explain any further than that other than just consider it to be evidence that you have ownership.
Okay. Yeah, and I get it better now.
Okay.
So, okay. Okay. The other question I have is, can I bypass the mother lode trust if I have, say, like $5,000 a month coming in from a different investment and put that directly in the management trust instead of putting it into the mother lode?
You can put it anywhere you want, but I wouldn't do it that way.
Okay.
If you have another, see, the management trust is a trust designed primarily just to manage money, not own money. Whenever there's any money in the management trust, it's going to be owned by the real estate trust, the mother lode trust, the automobile trust, the annuity trust. That's where the money is owned, is an individual trust. If you're going to have that money coming in, you should have a separate trust just for that.
Okay.
If I don't know exactly how you're deriving this income, but if at all possible, just set up another trust. I mean, they're not that expensive. I mean, these things are, you know, they're a bargain at five times this price, because that's exactly what I used to sell them for, five times this price in the early 90s, and we sold a lot of them. So, 10 grand. So,
okay, and then you would only need one management trust then to do
yes,
the bank
the management
account
trust,
for both?
Right. The management trust would then pay the – here's how the contract's going to work. Mother Lode buys the real estate trust because it was told to do that. Okay, the trustees were told to do that. So the management trust then is going to come into the fold, because where did the money go? If the real estate has no EI number, it cannot hold a bank account, which is a good thing. So the money was diverted from the real estate trust over the management trust for the real estate trust. See, the contracts that you will see here shortly shows you that, and the diagrams show you that. So the money is in the management trust, but it's actually owned by the real estate trust. It was given to it by the boy.
Yeah.
Get the point? You see, this is what makes it difficult to explain it. It's easier if you see it in a drawing, which we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And we will have that on the Internet shortly. And I promise you, I'll probably create a video, one of the first videos that I'm ever going to do on this stuff, about that. And
okay.
I've got it all graphed out, and I'm working on it, working on it, working on it, and I'm getting all of the vernacular the way it makes sense, and I'm drawing it up to where it will make sense to all of us, not just me, and it'll work. I know it'll work. I mean, it's proven it'll work. I've done it before successfully, but I did it in a corporate setting, not a trust setting. And now that I moved this whole idea to the trust setting, I'm working and finding that this is a much better program than what I used to do. So it's really going to be a strong system. It'll protect you. It'll make your life simpler. You only have one trust account, basically. You can do everything in one trust account. Because, you know, if you use Quicken, I don't know if you ever use Quicken or any of those programs on your computer, you have one account, but you got it all broke out, so you know what money went where, and I just use the spreadsheet on my computer. And I know exactly where my money's at all times. And as a matter of fact, on our blog, which nobody goes to, I've noticed, on our blog, I put there a sample of what I use. I'm looking for it right now. It's on the second page. Yes, on the second page. And I put this on 6/24/21. We've had 3 downloads of it. I don't know why people don't use it. Anyway, just click on it. You go to the blog post. This is how I manage all my money for my trust. Okay? So you can look at it. And it has all the stuff in here. And it's downloaded spreadsheet, it's easy to use. But going back to your question, this is going to be, right now it's rocket surgery. It's brain science or rocket surgery. I'm making it simple so we all can understand it, and that's what's taking time. But I will get her done.
Okay.
And hopefully I'll have it done by around Monday. So.
If
and what
I
do,
have...
go ahead.
Yeah, if I have that monthly money coming in, it's from an investment, do I have to do, like, minutes every month? I got X amount this month. The next time I got X amount this month. Is that in the minutes, or is that just in the bank
account?
No,
that's not your minutes. That's, you make 1 minute saying that you're going to do it, and then you have a spreadsheet, or actually it'll be going through the management trust, so on and so forth, the way you've set it up. The management trust will have all the accounting records. That's all you have to do.
Okay.
So
sounds good.
Now, for everybody, including you, for everybody on here that's listening to this, if you go to the tab that says New in the menu on our main website, in there I show you what I do every month. Well, I haven't done a whole lot in the last 6 months different. I've been working on the same stuff, which is just getting all these new minutes on there. But when this new system comes online, which will be shortly, I'll have it there under the new and tell you where it's at. I'll actually put a hyperlink so you can go right to that page. It describes it, shows you the pictures, and possibly the little video. But this is really good stuff that I'm doing.
Okay.
Actually, most
sounds
of the
good.
Stuff I have to, I got to give credit and kudos to Carol. She's come up with most of the stuff. It's my job to make it usable.
<You know? laughs>
So
it takes two, Jim. That's for sure.
Yeah. So we're going to get this stuff done because we know that, unfortunately for us, RV hasn't happened yet because we want this done before that happens, which will be this week. So then we can do the RV, folks. So it can be after this week. I'm not saying it's going to be, but it could be after this week because we'll have our stuff done. Anything
okay,
else?
Thank you. No, that's it. Thank you.
All right.
Thank you, Bonnie. Yes. That's a really good question. Thank you. Next. Karen, good morning.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Great. Kind of almost along the lines of the certificate and transfer, et cetera. Certificate transfer is really what I'm going to be talking about, and probably the most the situation that's always going to happen at some point, but we just don't know when, is that the trustee is going to pass, and they're not going to be able to sign the blank certificate that would assign it over to a new person. How does that work when someone is passes? You know, you have certificates in that are part of the trust or trust ownership. Let's say it's a Mudlode trust, and the Mudlode trust has certificates for the management trust or whatever that it created or exchanged into. And it has a beneficial certificate of beneficial interest, and that trustee for that Mudlode trust that signed the original papers passes. How the heck does a successor, is there a procedure for the successor or some kind of guideline of all the things the successor needs to do to sort it out?
I believe that there is. There is a minute for replacing certificates, and I don't know if Jim has it anywhere specific, but I do believe in our books and shields under book number 4, it tells you exactly what to do. The successor trustee merely goes in and creates, we have the template, you have a blank template. You do a new trust, certificate in the name of whatever person it is, whether it be yourself, the remaining trustee, your successor trustee, the amount of units, and you sign it as trustee. The original certificates are always signed by the creator. Creator is no longer in the picture. So if, let's say, Karen Barry dies and his certificate becomes null and void, you recreate a new certificate in your name for the amount of units that Barry had, and you sign it as trustee.
Well, you're talking about where there's two trustees. I'm talking about a situation where there's one trustee,
okay,
and that trustee is the one that
died.
They're not there to sign it anymore.
Their successor trustee just writes new certificates.
So the successor trustee writes a new certificate as the successor or as the trustee at that point because it slid in as trustee because they're successor. And they sign the certificate to themselves?
Yeah.
So let's say Joe Schmo is my successor. Joe Schmo, has my death certificate, knows that I'm gone according whatever, you know. Joe takes out the blank, prints it out onto the nice certificate paper, fills in their own name, and then signs it as successor or as trustee or as successor trustee in the bottom.
As trustee.
Okay. Writing a check to yourself. That's awesome.
Yeah, something like that. And also, one of the things Bonnie asked about the certificates, one of the really cool things about them, when the trusts are formed, as everybody knows, you get 100 trust certificate units. It's typically two certificates of 50 units each. But let's say, I'm going to just use you as an example. It's a single person. You did this, okay? You did this yourself. But you've got a couple kids you want to take care of, because people often ask, well, how do I take care of my children? Well, if you don't name them as successor trustees for whatever reason, you still want to take care of them financially. So let's just say you keep one certificate of 50 units, and then you void certificate number two, and you redistribute those 50 units. In your case, I know you have two children, but and they'll say they would each get 25. So whatever the case may be, you can take care of the next generation, current generation, whatever, by giving them certificates. So let's say everybody's happy and healthy and alive, and you, Karen, you decide, well, I'm going to make a distribution. I've got a lot of money rolling around here. Let's take out $500,000 and distribute it to the certificate holders. You, at order of 50 units, would get $250,000. And your kids, as owner of 25 units each, would get $125,000 each. So that way you're still taking care of them while you're alive and healthy, but there's still an opportunity for them to get a cash disbursement.
Actually, that's probably a cool way to do it, because they're not really, let's say the kids are not successors, but you can do that break off of the 50, the other 50 to the kids, and then it's there in the record, so that if you pass, your successor, all they have to do is make sure that that your 50 is covered.
Correct.
In some way.
Correct, absolutely.
Okay. And Jim, you know, you got training materials. I try to keep myself, how can I say this, a beginner's mind. You can test it out on me, because I'm always thinking, how do I do? I think of all these ways you could do stuff, and then I think in my head, I was like, how would you really do that? You know, how would you execute that? So, yeah, Jim, you can test it out on me. I'm happy to take that on.
Okay. You're on.
All right. Anything else, Karen?
No.
Okay. We'll talk to you soon. All right. Next question is area code 747, and I do not know who this is. So what's on your mind today?
Hi, Carol. It's Rose. How are you?
Oh, yeah, I'm well. And I was just thinking of you as a perfect example of redistributing your certificates. I'm well, Rose. What's your question?
Yes. So anyway, well, in the first place, I would like to thank Jim. I called him once, I think the other day, because, the dilemma I am in, Carol, right? Because my family is back home in the Philippines.
Rose, we're having a hard time understanding you. Can you speak a little more slowly and a little louder, please?
Sure. As I said, I would like to say thank you to Jim. You know, she really gave me a very good information as to what I'm supposed to be doing in regards to my situation. And as you know, what is my situation? I am in Carol, right? Now, I was telling him that I have, prior to the trust, I already bought small currency, of which we were able to put it in my Schedule A. And after that, I started buying additional currencies, and I understand that we only have to put the title of the currency without mentioning the amount and the value. And there is no specific form or correspondence to that effect, just to add it into our Schedule A, right?
That's correct. No values are listed, no amounts are listed, no values are listed.
Yes, and then, now the problem is that since I have my boys back home, how could I send them money there? And looks like we had a script before, but then say if it's a big amount of money that we have to send, how can I get money from the trust to be able to send it to them? Since the money is already in the trust.
Okay, the example I just gave Karen. Okay, so suppose you have extra money in your trust, you need to make a distribution. So I know in your case, at any time, in your case, I know you have a lot of certificate holders. So you want to make a distribution, and you're going to divide it up into how many units each person has. So let's say we'll use $500,000. You're going to make a distribution of $500,000. And for the person who has 10 units, they'd get $50,000, et cetera, et cetera. So whatever the amount is, whatever their amount of certificate is, that's the percentage they get of the distribution that you make. You can make that distribution whenever you want and for whatever reason you want.
All right, just let me jump in here real quick.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Jim.
Okay. When I talked to Rose the other day, she sent me an email. I have not had the opportunity to read it yet, but I have an idea what she's talking about. What I was talking to her, she wants to make monthly distributions to the kids. So
No, not really, Jim. It's not. It's
okay,
they have to help them out with big amounts because they have to also purchase their house, their car, and everything.
All right. And just do as Carol said, it's the same thing. What my point was going to be is if you're going to make monthlies, you don't want to do it that way. But if you make one or two time distributions, exactly what Carol said, works perfectly.
And we have no qualms about sending the money to the Philippines. We are only allowed to send a certain amount. And there is no problem with the IRS or whatsoever, since this is the money from the trust.
That is beyond our purview.
Yeah.
I
mean, we don't know how to handle
make a distribution right away.
No, Rose, that's we can't answer questions about the IRS and limits and how to send money overseas. That's not what we do. We can tell you the mechanics of how to do it as far as getting money out of the trust, how you get it to them. We cannot advise you on that.
Okay. Yeah, because we don't have Social Security here. We don't have legal documents.
Right. Well, I'm sorry, we can't help you on that. Anything else on your mind?
I adhere to the solution that was given to me by Jim by setting up another trust, making them then my co-trustees. I understand. And then from it has there is the account wherein I can give them their individual debit card, and from there they can already make some withdrawals. Is that right, Jim?
That's what I was saying. Yeah, if you do it that way, again, we're stuck between. And like I tried to tell you the other day, Rose, we don't know what the new government's going to look like when we get the new one. I assure you, it will not be an IRS. We're still living in the dark ages right now, so we really can't say too much more about that. So give me a call if you have to, or call Carol, because there's a surprise ending here to this show today. So just give Carol a call, and she'll go over that with you.
Okay.
So
thank you, Jim. Thank you, Carol. It's nice to hear
from you. Thank you, Rose. Good to hear from you. Okay, good to hear from you. Thank you. Bye bye. Bye. Okay. Allie, what's on your mind today?
Oh, hi there. Good morning. I just wanted to thank you for such a top-notch trust and all the work you put in it. Just really appreciate it. But also just wanted to remind people who wanted to join our group, we can help each other out at alpo4948@gmail.com. That's all.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. Thanks for the compliment. Appreciate it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Al, you had another question?
Just a quickie. I was noticing on the page that shows the PDFs and the recordings of the calls that it says that this call is open to the public. And I'm wondering if that means anybody can just call in, or if it's the members, or how that works.
I'm not exactly sure. Jim, you know what she's talking about?
Yeah, I do. Yeah, this is open. I mean, she was asking, can anybody call in and talk to us? Yeah, anybody.
Oh, yeah.
Not just to our members. We only send out we send the email out to about 1,300 people. So, we do get people from time to time call me directly that are not currency owners, nor do they have trust, but they're curious. They'll listen to one of our calls. They'll call me and chat with me briefly about it. And we've generated a couple of customers from that in the last few months. But yeah, this is always open to anybody. That's why they're at the website where we have the calls is not a members-only website. Our big website is a members-only. We do allow people to see certain things, but not everything. So anybody can listen to these calls, and anybody can download the PDF. This, we want to make this as public as possible because we're trying to protect people. We're trying to keep the evil beast away from them. So,
okay, great. Thank you very much.
You bet.
All right, thanks, Al. I think, folks, at the end of And Jim said you have something else to add, Jim?
Yeah. I think it was October last year, I said that I was going to try and retire in June of this year. And Carol and I had a long discussion this week about this, and I have decided to retire. So this is my last call. I'll finish up on what we said we were going to do. I'll still be working with Carol, getting the new webmaster up to speed on how to run the website since I built it. And she'll be taking over everything. My security at Indicator Information will be forwarded over to info at Indicator Information. So I'm retired. So after today, I really don't want to be talking to anybody about trust, not that being rude, but I have another life that I want to go, a project I want to work on. And this, I know it's a surprise to some of you, but Carol and I discussed this last November, October, November, that I plan on bailing about this time regardless. And I don't know when the RV is going to happen. I wished I knew. My opinion, for what it's worth, is not much, but my opinion is it'll be sometime last July, possibly into August. There's too many things that are up in the air yet. And then this latest attack on President Trump, I think that's going to burn them down. I think this is the beginning of the end for that group. And I'm tired. I'm 70 years old. My health is not very good. I keep bouncing off the floor, and it's painful. And I need my time back. And I'm frankly, folks, I'm just done with this stuff. I love what I did. Carol's going to be a great friend, always been a great friend, always will be a great friend. It's just time for me to move on. I got things I got to get done. And I don't have much time left. And I won't say any more about that, but there is everything has a date stamp on it when you can't use it no more. Mine's getting up pretty close. So I just need to take and go do what I got to do. It's been a lot of fun. I will continue to get the stuff done that I promised I will do. I'll get it done this week. Now you understand why I'm saying I'm going to get it done this week, because I'm not going to be available anymore. And that's all I want to say about it. I'm not... there's no animosity or remorse or anything like that. So it's time for me to move on. But Carol will be in contact a lot over the next few weeks, getting everything moved over. It should be an easy transition. But I am done. Like they say, stick a fork in me, I'm done.
Well, thank you, Jim. I understand. All the conversations that we have, I totally understand where you're coming from. But I'm sure I'm not the only one that's going to miss you. So all I can say is good luck and God bless.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Well, I'm not going to give out my sign-off numbers anymore because I don't want to be called anymore. So, Carol, I'm going to just sit back and listen to the end of the tape, and then I will get this on the website later today, folks, and I will get everything done for the next one. By the way, the next call Carol will have will be on the 24th. And I will get that date on our countdown counter on our website right away. And then this will probably be on probably about 2:30 or 3 o'clock. It takes time for the computer where we get these audios to generate them. And then I already have the PDF. I can put it on right now. But the rest of it. So I'll get that done today. All right. So for me, that's it. Adios, everybody.
Right.
It's been a lot of fun. Made a lot of good friends.
Take care. Thanks. Well, I'm inclined to agree with Jim with all the stuff that's going on. I don't see this RV happening right away. From everything that we're reading, we are at the precipice, but, there's too much going on. I agree with Jim. But when it does happen, don't worry. We will send out a blast email saying the eagle has landed, as we've mentioned before. And, I urge you to be prepared, whether it's next week or next month or August or whenever, it is going to happen soon. So I do, again, urge you to be prepared. Typical turnaround time is less than a week, but I expect that to be considerably longer post-RV. We do expect to be very busy post-RV. Our requests for trust will be handled on a first-come, first-served basis, and all applications are date-stamped, so please don't ask me to put in front of the line, as that won't happen. I do have other people that we're working with that I don't think anybody can ever totally replace Jim, but as far as getting production out and stuff like that, we do have other people that will be stepping in, and maybe next call I will introduce you.
Okay,
anyway, Jim, oh, go ahead.
One
Jim.
More thing.
Go ahead.
All right.
Yep.
I am now LGBT, which stands for Liberty, Guns, Beer, and Trump. I put that bumper sticker on my car, and everybody loves it.
There you go. Yep.
All right.
Okay.
I'm signing. Here.
Okay, thanks. Thank you. So whenever this RV does occur, don't forget that I will be taking off a few weeks post-RV. But our applications can still come in online. That's the only way you're going to get to the top of the line, more or less, is fill in your application as soon as you're able. Our contract prices are still very well priced at only $19.95 for new clients, $17.95 for additional trust or family members. We also offer a 20% referral fee for any fully paid new trust. So thank you all for your time and attention. My name is Carol Worlius. Sorry, guys. I knew this was coming, and I'm still breaking up. My number is 877-333-5018. I'm available between 10 and 6 Eastern Time, Monday through Friday. And the best way to reach me is by email. I'm so sorry. info@indicatorinformation.com. Have a happy and safe weekend, everybody. Go RV, and God bless America. Thank you.